Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
From now on, when I hear that Chicago song, I'm going to feel like I'm at work. But it's just designed to wake you up easily, gently, with something familiar. How you doing this morning? It's 5:09. Bob Surratt with you today. And thanks to Papa Nicholas Coffee, I'm almost awake. How about you? Andy Mazur's here on Sports Today for Dave Ennett. What's Dave up to tonight?
Well, let's see. Dave has a basketball game tonight at Indiana, so he's in Bloomington.
And Mary in the traffic department, as always. And there was a mess earlier on the Ryan, right? But those ramps are cleared. Is that what
I heard? Yes, the 55 ramps to the Ryan. All reopen around 4:30.
And in the newsroom, Steve will keep us updated, along with a couple of other reporters that will be going to during the day. And I know everybody kind of woke up this morning with the sort of nervousness about the news events of last night, but we'll keep you updated on that, let you know if there's anything new that happened since you went to bed last night. And of course, at 5:10 or so, we offer a prize for the first caller of the day. And today it happens to be you, Bob, in Aurora. Congratulations. How you doing?
I'm so excited, Bob.
You are.
The first call. Uh-huh. And then to listen to you back on the air. It's an honor.
Well, I appreciate that. We have a wonderful prize for you, Bob, for being the first caller today. And just for the record, for tomorrow, if you want to get in on this, you can call in. And, you know, if you're the first caller and we deem you airworthy, 312-981-7200, you get on and you get a prize. We're cleaning out the office, Bob. I hope you don't mind. We're giving away used goods. But I think you'll enjoy this from the world of golf. It's the electric putting partner. It's a little device designed to improve your putting skills.
And I need that.
You're speechless, aren't you?
You know, I was also hoping for a Luminati's pizza, but you know, I can't.
You know what? I could do that, but then people would start going crazy here with the first caller and demanding prizes. Don't be bothered at all by the fact that on this electric putting partner, there's a sticker that says Goodwill. $2.99. Just ignore that. What are you doing up so early, Robert?
Well, I wanted to be the first caller, and I did listen yesterday, and I totally agree with you that the GM's got jingles now, and it's so much better.
Well, good. I'm glad you enjoy it. What do you do for a living?
I'm a driver for a Stone Wheel Company, delivering auto parts throughout the western suburbs.
Are you on the road?
Pardon?
You on the road already?
Oh, no, not yet. Okay. They don't let me out until the sun comes up. But I used to do mornings radio in Joliet and Aurora. Uh-huh. And so I know what it's like.
Yeah. And then you came to your senses and got legitimate work. Good for you.
There you go.
Bob, right. Thank you very much for being with us, and congratulations to me and the first caller. And the lovely Vivian will get all the necessary information so we can get that wonderful prize to you.
Say hi to Mary Ann, too. We miss her.
Thanks, I will.
All right. Thanks, Bob. Welcome aboard.
Appreciate that.
For News at 10, watch WGN, Micah Mater, Joe Donlin, Dan Rohn, and Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling. For TV News at 10, watch Chicago's very own WGN.
It is 5:18. Normally at this time, we talk to somebody over at WGN-TV about what's going on here in Chicago, local news that they're covering. But this morning, in the wake of activities late tonight, last night and overnight, we thought we'd get Courtney Guzman on the line here to tell us about the latest in Iraq, in Iran, and in Washington. Good morning, Courtney. How you doing?
Hey, good morning to you, Bob. Yeah, this is a big deal, what's going on in the Middle East, because a lot of people fear that these tensions could escalate and result in war. Now, God forbid that happens, but we'll see. We'll see. So, you know, last night we've mentioned that they had these missile attacks. Iran decided to retaliate after the loss of their high-ranking general, Qasem Soleimani. That took place on Friday when the president ordered a drone strike against this high-ranking general for the Iranian army. This is Iran's retaliation. They fired at least 22 ballistic missiles into Iraq yesterday, focusing on two bases in Al-Asad and Erbil that house U.S. military personnel. Now, right now, the Department of Defense is saying that there are no casualties and not reporting any casualties at this point. However, Iranian state TV is reporting that there are 80 casualties and some damage to artillery there. So we do know the president tweeted last night saying all is well and that assessments of casualties and damages are taking place right now, and so far so good. That was the last time we heard from him, and that was about 7 hours ago. We did hear overnight from U.S. Senator and Iraq War veteran Tammy Duckworth. She feels that there is a need for a measured response here. She says, but she's quite concerned because she says she feels that this is also an opportunity for de-escalation, but she's concerned about whether or not the Trump administration will be able to facilitate that. We also heard from Senator Lindsey Graham from South Carolina. He's saying that retaliations, he's talked to the president, and retaliations are imminent. They're going to happen, and they're going to be hurtful to the Iranians, and we're talking about targeting economic bases like oil refineries. So we are supposed to hear from President Trump later this morning. We don't know if he plans to lay out his plan of action, but we definitely want to hear more about if, in fact, there were any casualties as a result of these missile strikes fired by Iranians from Iran into Iraq yesterday around 5:30 Eastern time.
The president will address the nation, and we don't have a time on that yet, do we?
We don't have a time, so we're just waiting to see, keeping a close eye on Twitter this morning just to see what the president may say if he puts a time out there or anything like that.
There was a report earlier about the Pentagon and the Defense Department being mum on casualties, perhaps because they don't want to give Iran any information they could use for propaganda purposes. But you mentioned that there has been a report on casualties from Iran. Is that right?
Correct. Iranian state TV reporting 80 casualties and some damage to artillery. Of course, if they did target these military bases where we have U.S. forces there, it's my understanding these bases were actually on high alert prior to the attack coming, the missile attacks being launched. So there is a chance they could have evacuated. There is a chance they could have reduced staffing there. We just don't know. We're waiting to get those answers. But I will say that we've heard from the Ayatollah in Iran, and he is saying that this is a punch in the face to Americans and, actually boasting about this missile attack.
Yeah, when I heard that, and I think what the quote was a slap in the face, and I thought, well, does this mean that there's more, that this is not really their major retaliation? What does that mean? And I guess so we're going to have the analysts go over that this morning, aren't we?
Yeah, the Ayatollah did say this was a slap in the face, and it just made me think that, you know, just exactly what you were thinking as well. If this is a slap in the face, you know, what else is going to take place here? Depending on what analysts you may have listened to, some people feel that Iran doesn't have the gall to attack here on U.S. soil here in the mainland. That won't happen, but these targeted actions will likely happen to U.S. Forces or different bases overseas. So we will see what happens.
Right. And we'll be talking to a couple of different network correspondents during the morning to keep everybody posted on what's happening with that situation. And the fact that Iran used ballistic missiles seems to weigh heavily on whether or not the U.S. will respond. And that's something that people are talking about, too, this morning. And the experts are weighing in on the fact that, and I guess it's been confirmed they were ballistic missiles, correct?
Yes, yes, that was confirmed through the Department of Defense, as well as Iranian officials have also acknowledged that as well. So, yeah.
Courtney,
it's pretty serious.
Yes, and what else will you be covering this morning for WGN-TV? Do you know yet?
Yeah, so we're covering, you know how we do on the morning show. We have a wide range of topics that we cover. I know that Nancy Liu is live at Stroger Hospital on an expressway shooting from overnight, non-life-threatening injuries. I'm told it happened off of an expressway ramp. She has all those details. And, of course, you know, we're trying to keep up on all the rest of the local news, as well as what's making headlines, especially in the Middle East here.
And I know you will go to the president live, as we will, when and if he addresses the nation this morning. And the report is he will, but we just don't know when yet. And we'll get more. We're going to go to our White House in Washington, D.C. correspondent for that later today, too, to see if we can get any more information. But in the meantime, all we've heard from the president was the tweet late last night or overnight, right?
And it's actually kind of surprising that we haven't heard more from the president, because we know that he is a tweeter. He loves tweet, and this last tweet that was sent out is now 8 hours old. And, you know, he's saying that the assessments are being done, so maybe he's being mum, you know, as he's possibly learned about some casualties in trying to figure out how to break this to Americans. Now, we hope that's not the case, but we shall see what happens when he does address the nation today. And perhaps that's the reason why we don't have the time. It may be very fluid, because they are actively, you know, trying to assess what actually happened. 22 ballistic missiles fired toward these bases. There's got to be some damage. So we are just waiting to get confirmation of what actually happened, what actually played out yesterday evening.
Yeah, the tweet from the president, all is well, assessments of damages and casualties taking place, so far so good. So that's
right.
All we have from President Trump.
And not only that, still bragging about us, the United States, being the most powerful and well-equipped military anywhere in the world by far. So, you know, with that being said, I think he's trying to say, don't mess with the U.S. Because we will come for you. You mess with us, we will come for you. So we shall see. We will find out in a matter of hours this morning, for sure.
Yeah, I think the thing everybody is sort of nervous about is now we answer that attack, then there's another retaliation to that, and then it keeps escalating, and then you hope somewhere along the way this all stops, and we'll see what happens. We'll follow the story. Courtney, thank you very much for filling us in there from WGN-TV. Courtney Guzman. It's 5:27, and coming up, oh, this is going to be good. Do you know that you and I have something in common with the most successful, wealthiest people in the world? I'm not kidding you here. We do. We'll be talking about that coming up at about 5:39 this morning. So, Andy and Steve in the newsroom, and also Mary over there at the traffic department, you're going to want to listen carefully coming up at 5:39.
I'm okay? Checking my wallet, yeah. And it is not my wallet that I have in common with him. I'm telling you right now.
Checking my phone.
No, trust me. Trust me, we all have something in common with people like Warren Buffett and Tim Cook and Oprah Winfrey, you know. So feel better about your day. What day is this today? It's Wednesday, January 8th. And later this morning, we'll be talking to Karen Conti about the law. And I want to ask especially about the Harvey Weinstein trial and what's going on there. So we'll be doing that coming up between 6 and 7. And as always, after 6, the top 6 stories at 6. Keep you updated on all of that. And I see where the Blackhawks not only lost last night, Andy, but there was an injury, too, wasn't there?
Dylan Strome out in that game. He fell awkwardly on his right ankle going into the boards and limped off the ice. They said that they'll have a further update on him later on today. But yeah, they're falling like flies over there because there's a couple of guys on long-term injury that are out for the season, you know, Calvin DeHaan and Brent Seabrook. And we haven't seen Andrew Shaw, Drake Cajula. They're both in concussion protocol. Brandon Saad's been out with the injury. And now you throw in Dylan Strome, and it's tough to replace these guys.
And the Sox got one of the Cubs' best relief pitchers.
They did. They have reportedly, no official announcement from the White Sox yet, but it certainly sounds like this is a done deal. One-year deal with Steve Cishek. You have to say that name very carefully. Cishek. One-year deal. He made 150 appearances over the last couple of years for the Cubs.
He was effective with that sort of submarine delivery. Yeah, exactly. And I was braced for the worst because we were talking yesterday about how the wind chill would be near zero this morning. But in most areas, other than the wind, it's not as bad as we thought. We'll get you updated on the weather. And the messy stuff isn't going to come till Saturday. So, and actually, there's a warm-up. If you can get through today and tonight, it'll be like 48 on Thursday, 45 Friday. So, I'm sorry, yes? Oh, okay. I'm hearing voices in my ear. And the problem is when I leave the station and go home, I keep hearing those voices. Let's get into the newsroom. The Bob Sirott Orchestra with that song. Is that supposed to signify something specific? Do we know?
Hopefully good times, right?
Is that a request? I'm not sure what that's all about. It's 5:39, and as I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, you and I have something in common with very wealthy folks. 10 highly successful people wake up before 6 a.m. That's the story that caught my eye this morning. Waking up can be one of the most difficult and dreaded parts of going to work, of course. But for some of the most successful people in art, business, and sports, rising early is key to their success. This is supposed to make us feel better.
Did you say only 6?
Pardon me?
How many?
10. Highly successful people.
Oh, 10.
Apple CEO Tim Cook starts his mornings at 3:45. Elvest CEO and co-founder Sally Krawcheck wakes up at 4, and Oprah Winfrey, Michelle Obama, and Indra Newell have been known to rise at the crack of dawn. Benjamin Spall, the author of My Morning Routine, How Successful People Start Every Day, Inspired, and founding editor of MyMorningRoutine.com, has spoken with hundreds of successful figures about their morning regimens, and he said it's not a coincidence that all of these people have routines, and they all get up very, very early. And then there's this list of 10 successful people who wake up with or before the sun. Bill McNabb, chairman of the Vanguard Group, wakes up around 5, gets to his desk at 6:15. Bob Ferguson, attorney general of Washington State, wakes up at 5 to make breakfast for his family. Oh, that could set a bad precedent for us. I don't want to spread that information. Brad Feld, venture capitalist at the Foundry Group, rises anywhere between 5:30 and 9 to watch the day open up. Okay, so he's a late sleeper. Carolyn Brickle, U.S. Olympic bronze medalist, rises at 5:30 to work out without an alarm. General Stanley McChrystal, retired U.S. Army four-star general, wakes up at 4 and doesn't eat until dinner. Well, there's your military man. Melody Hobson, we know Melody around Chicago, president of Ariel Investments, gets up at 4 a.m. to exercise and take a bath. Melody McCloskey, founder and CEO of Style Seat, trained herself to get up at 5:45. Peter Balta, I think is the way he pronounces it, president of education technology at Texas Instruments, wakes up at 5:20. L. Raphael Reif, president of MIT, gets up at 5 and rarely skips breakfast. And Scott Adams, creator of Dilbert, wakes up at 4 a.m., he says, to be his smartest. Now, I find that the getting up part is not the hard part here. The getting up part is easy compared to the fact that you have to talk and activate your brain and so forth at this hour. You know, that's the difficult part. I mean, if I just needed to get up very early and then not speak or be coherent until about noon, that would be no problem getting up. But
yeah, and some days that's easier than others. I know that there are some days I say things come out of my mouth that I don't even expect to come out of my mouth.
Yeah.
They're not exactly on the paper. They're not in the script. And I'm like, what did I just say?
Yeah. Here's Karen from, is it North Lakeview, Karen? Morning.
No, North Lake.
And North Lake. Yeah, you're up early. And are you wealthy?
Oh, no, I am not wealthy. That's what's so funny. I wake up because I need to use the washroom every morning at 3:45. So I'm off, and once I'm up, I can't go back to sleep, so which I do try, but I just end up staying up then and either cleaning or whatever, and then I eventually get ready to go to work.
Yeah, well, here's the thing about getting up really, really early is you're not disturbed anymore by having to go to the washroom because, you know, you're up already, and that's
right.
That's
and, the way I, it is. And what you said was it was like a
doesn't
habit,
interrupt your sleep. You're getting up
maybe
and going.
That's part of what happens to them too, you know, they just wake up and can't go back to sleep, and you know.
Yeah, well, we have something in common with them. We get up early. You know, the wealthy part, well, not so sure about that. And Karen, right. I appreciate you listening this morning. Where are you off to today?
I'm off to Naperville, actually, for my third day at a new teaching position. I retired in June and couldn't stay retired, and I just started a new position at a new school. So I'm very excited.
Well, I know how you feel. I'm the new guy here, so good luck to you.
Right.
And
thanks.
We appreciate everything teachers do for us. Thanks, Karen.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And since we've been back here, haven't had a chance to say hi to Orion Samuelson. Good morning. Oh, how you doing? Is he there? I've turned him on. Yeah, he's apparently not there yet. Unless it's this one. Oh, there he is.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. I'm learning which button to press. Sorry.
Well, I'm still learning, and I've been doing it a few years. So
yeah, 60. Anyway, 60 now, right? Congratulations on that.
Well, it'll be 60 years on the air at WGN come September.
That's
if I make it that far.
You will. And that's like 120 in any other job.
And most of it, you've been talking about getting up early, but, you know, for about 40 years, I'd get up at 2:45 in the morning in Huntley or in Lincolnshire, where I've lived, and I'd be downtown on the air by 5 o'clock. So, and finally, Jimmy Vitale said, not a good idea for somebody at your age getting up, driving 50 miles one way to be on the air. So we're going to start you out a little bit later. So anyway, but good to be with you, and nice to have you back with us, sir.
How do I get that kind of deal where I can just broadcast from home, sleep a little later? Do I have to wait for like 60 years?
Probably not, because the technology is here. You know, I'm sitting right now in my WGN West studio in Scottsdale, Arizona. And the temperature is, what, 45 degrees here in Scottsdale, where it has also been, I think, a cool winter thus far, and a little wetter than the desert normally is.
Yeah, so. But you warm up later in the day in the desert. For us here, this is about as warm as it's going to get today anyway.
So. Yeah, as soon as the sun comes up, the sun makes a big difference, and it'll warm up. My son arrived here last night because he's a golfer, and so he's looking forward to playing golf. So.
Good for you. And in the agribusiness department, what are the headlines? What are the stories that catch Orion Samuelson's eye this morning?
Well, coming up on Friday, which is just a day or two away, we will get our final crop yield report from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And despite the most challenging weather year I can remember in agriculture, agricultural cropping numbers are looking pretty good. The trade expecting that corn production will come in at 13,513,000,000 bushels, average yield of 166.2. The soybean harvest expected to, the numbers coming in, a total production figure of 3,512,000,000 bushels per acre, and the average yield at 46.6. I think that's probably a good deal better than what farmers were thinking last year when it rained in the spring and we couldn't get planted. And then at harvest time, it rained and an early snow on Halloween that really moved into the harvest season. And so those are the numbers the trade is expecting. And we'll get the real numbers on Friday morning at 11 o'clock. So producers and traders will be watching those numbers carefully because they give us the scorecard for 2019. And again, Bob, the technology, not just in broadcasting, but in agriculture, is amazing because with the weather we had last crop season, I don't think many farmers were expecting the numbers to come in this way. But we'll find out on Friday at 11 a.m.
And as you always say, if you eat, you should be interested in the agribusiness news, correct?
If you eat, you're involved in agriculture, the most basic industry on the planet, because if we can't be fed, we're not going to accomplish much of anything, and particularly getting up early.
And before I let you go, Orion, I know you're very good about watching the stock market and the business news. And in the wake of what's going on in the Middle East, are we expecting markets to reflect that today and in the days ahead? How do you see it?
Well, I think anytime you have that kind of an upset anywhere in the world, it upsets the markets. And it's interesting that the stock market and the agricultural markets react pretty similar right now because, you know, we're coming out of the U.S.-China trade war. The Chinese delegation will arrive in Washington on Monday. They're here for a quick trip. They'll be leaving again on Wednesday. But anytime you get that kind of a situation, or now the Middle East situation, which, you know, has been with us, Bob, for as long as we've been on the planet, I think there's always been concern about what will happen to the world with that oil situation in the Middle East. And so the market reaction so far hasn't been as great as it could have been. And so let's hope that it continues that way.
All right, Orion, good talking to you. Have a great day out west.
Okay, you too, my friend.
And we'll update you on everything going on in the Middle East in exactly 6 minutes. Wanted to catch up on some of the feedback we've been getting the last couple of days. As I mentioned, the text number is the same as our phone number here if you ever want to get in touch, 312-981-7200. And let's see, I want to acknowledge this from 773. Please, please, please stop the crumbled paper. It's so annoying, especially if you're listening with a headset. I'm sorry about that. We received a number of texts from people who were upset.
I got to go back to that one. Is that the real crumbled paper or the fake crumbled paper?
No, this is...
He's talking about the real one?
This, yeah, this is me. It's not the special effect we do on the Top 6 at 6, Joe. The Bachelor segment we did yesterday aggravated many folks. Because we didn't have a spoiler alert on that. So, you know, sorry that...
Well, I didn't watch the whole thing either, so I didn't divulge too much information, I hope.
I thought we were okay. I mean...
I did watch the rest last night, however.
I'm not into The Bachelor.
I know.
But everybody else in my house is.
I'm debating whether I'm going to continue or not.
About the crumpled paper sound effect tape. From 847, the sounds of the crumpled paper during the Top 6 at 6 is perfect because it signifies the end of that particular story. Other sounds suggested, like a teletype or other device, signify an incoming story and do not give the sense of conclusion. Try not to change too much of what was a comfortable and familiar program. All right. Let's see. Page 2. Let's see. We've done that. Steve had more energy in the morning. This is from 773. His voice and topics were entertaining. Bob is too mild for a morning show. I'll talk to Mrs. Surratt about that because she can make some Cuban coffee.
Spice it up.
That'll take care of that problem.
Bring from it up for everybody.
815. I like Bob. Sort of. Boy, higher praise than that you're not going to get. The Middle East update and all the news. That's next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for this Wednesday, January the 8th. Here are a couple of other things that could move the stock markets today. A change in outstanding consumer credit for November comes out this afternoon. Analysts forecasting an increase of $17.5 billion over October's total. Those numbers at about 2 o'clock this afternoon. We'll also get the latest from the Mortgage Bankers Association on weekly mortgage applications. The ADP employment report is out. We'll also see the EIA petroleum status report coming as well. Also, your business confidence numbers and earnings today from a number of companies, including the Chicago area-based Walgreens, Bed Bath & Beyond, and Constellation Brands. Just a few things that could move the markets on Wednesday, January the 8th.
Bob Surratt, up dark and early with you at almost 6:10. Right now, we'll keep you updated on what's going on in the Middle East. President Trump is supposed to address the nation after Iran struck back, and we don't have a time on that yet, but we will bring that to you live when that happens, and we'll keep you posted during the morning on any new developments in that department. Health stories always catch my eye because I am a hypochondriac, and there's an interesting piece from the New York Times that's in the Tribune today. Do you like the arts? Well, you could be living longer. There's a new study that sees health benefits from being engaged with the arts. Numerous studies have shown that art and music can help soothe chronic pain, stave off symptoms of dementia and Alzheimer's disease, and accelerate brain development in young children. Now there's evidence that simply being exposed to the arts may help people live longer. Researchers in London, who followed thousands of people 50 and older for 14 years, discovered that those who went to a museum or attended a concert just once or twice a year were 14% less likely to die during that period than those who didn't. The chances of living longer only went up the more frequently people engaged with the arts. The study was just published in the British Medical Journal. People who went to a museum or the theater once a month or even every few months had a 31% reduced risk of dying in that period, according to the study. I'm going to have to revise my opinion of going to the theater. Marianne loves going, but I have trouble in the theater. I don't know why. I love movies, but my mind wanders in the theater. For live shows, I'm not sure why that happens. But now, in light of this study, I think I'm going to reform. And since art and music apparently makes you live longer, I think I'll have to go into the Bob Surratt record collection for a snippet honoring Elvis Presley. This is the King's birthday. He would have been 85 today. So we have that standing by. And also, coming up, we'll go over the top six stories at six, including the latest from Iran and Washington, D.C.
Now for some more news. Ready?
Welcome to the top six at six.
What?
That is great radio.
This is your first look at what people, animals, and assorted fruits and vegetables will be talking about today.
Yes, it is at 6:16, and let me just say ahead of time that when you hear the crumbled paper sound effect, we're looking for a new sound to delineate the one story ending and the next one beginning. In the meantime, here we go. Of course, everybody is concerned about what's happening in the Middle East and the latest from Iran. They say they have concluded their attacks on U.S. forces in Iraq and did not seek escalation. That's the quote from Iranian officials. President Trump plans to make a statement later today. We will carry that live here on WGN. No time is set for that yet. The statement from Iran's foreign minister followed the those two missile attacks on bases in Iraq housing American forces in response to the killing of General Soleimani, the leader of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. And, of course, the fact that it was a ballistic missile strike may have upped the ante here, and we'll keep an eye on that. Also, there's a plane crash in the news, a Boeing 737, not the plane that's been the subject of all of the concern, but this passenger jet operated by a Ukrainian airline crashed minutes after takeoff from Tehran this morning, killing all on board. There were 167 passengers and 9 crew members. And it was Ukraine International Airlines Flight 752. No connection to the missile strike. Sports, the Blackhawks Players Guide, more than 8,000 students through its Future Goals Hockey Scholar Program, which includes a STEM showcase skills competition. Former First Lady Michelle... Oh, we didn't have the sound during these stories. I'm sorry. There you go. Former First Lady Michelle Obama announced that they are set to launch an Instagram TV series that will follow 4 college students sharing the highs and lows of their first year experiences in order to inspire other new students. And returning to Chicago for the 90th year, the annual Progressive Insurance Chicago Boat, RV, and Sales Show. Good to think about on a cold, windy morning. That's the Midwest's largest indoor boat show. It's opening today at McCormick Place, showcasing more than 700 boats, 100 RVs, sailing and boating educational opportunities, plus the latest in technology and outdoor accessories. The show will introduce a new Discover Boating Experience Hub and a special $5 ticket price after 5 p.m. today. And that show runs until Sunday. And now we have this.
For the top 6 at 6.
Come on!
I kind of rattled through that, didn't I? Well, okay. Coming up this morning, we will continue to update you on the Iran situation. We will do that. Steve's in our newsroom, keeping you posted, and we will check in with a couple of ABC News correspondents at the White House and in Iran during the morning. So you will know what's going on if you stay with us right here. I mentioned that music and the arts, good for longevity. And so I thought at 6:19, a quick trip into the Bob Surratt record collection to salute Elvis Presley and his 85th birthday. And who can ever forget the King sounding a little out of it, doing this live song.
Do you gaze at your bald head and wish you had hair?
What a touching tribute this is to Elvis's birthday, isn't it? Are you lonesome tonight?
And I had no cause to doubt
you. You have to smile when you hear this, right?
Swing it, baby.
It's 6:21.
Those poor backup singers.
But they just kept going.
I wanted to punch him in the mouth.
Right, that's the funny part about that. And you hear the band and the backup singers just not missing anything, right? They just keep on going. And
it's amazing.
It's the routine.
And so does Elvis. He keeps on going, too. 6:21. So, Andy, in for Dave Bennett, covering sports today, and the story that catches a lot of us this morning is the story about the White Sox adding Steve Cishek, one of the most effective relief pitchers on the north side of town last year. And that's not official yet? Is that what we're hearing?
Yeah, I think it's pending a physical, and the team usually waits to
to dot all the I's and cross all the T's before they make those official announcements. There have been a lot of reports that this is pretty much a done deal, 1 year with a club option for 2021. And this is a very effective pitcher. I mean, he's a workhorse. He ate up a lot of innings and a lot of appearances over the last couple of years on the north side. Now he'll probably be the main setup guy on the south side.
And are we done speculating that Tom Brady is going to be a Chicago Bear? We were talking to Dave Bennett about this yesterday, and he didn't think there was really any substance to this story.
Yeah, I don't see it either. I really don't. I mean, I can't imagine that a GM like Ryan Pace, who is so dedicated and so locked in with Mitch Trubisky, would ever bring anybody in who would never be a backup. I mean, you're never going to put Tom Brady as a backup. I mean, obviously he was a low draft choice, but what he's been able to do, you're not going to bring him in to do that.
Doesn't
I think a lot of fans would like to see it.
Yeah, of course. And as we mentioned, the Blackhawks lost 2-1 last night, and also another injury to report.
Yeah, Dylan Strome kind of fell awkwardly on the ice and then went into the boards in the early in the second period and then left. He had an ankle injury, a right ankle injury, that's going to be updated a little bit later on today. But it's a MASH unit over there. I mean, they're trying, and I think we talked about it the other day. The worst part about it is you don't like to talk about injuries, but the best part about it is you get to see what some of your young talent has and whether they're able to kind of live up to the expectations the organization has for them. And I think a couple of them have been doing the job.
Yes, they have. I mean, the thing with the Hawks seems to be they're streaky and there's no consistency, correct?
That's the biggest problem. It's inconsistent. I mean, they'll play games on the road against the Avalanche and the Jets and look like world beaters against the best teams in the league, and then come home and lay an egg against the Devils, one of the worst teams in the league. So there's no rhyme or reason for it. Again, it's just the youth and inexperience trying to mesh with some of that experience that's still left from the core.
6:24. I have a couple minutes here before our Middle East and Chicago news update and list weather and traffic. So let me finish up on the feedback from the texts here at 312-981-7200. We were talking about the Impossible Burger and the imitation pork that was in the news yesterday from 708. The second ingredient in the Beyond Burger is coconut oil. The burger has 30% saturated fat. Might as well eat a regular burger. From 630, welcome back, Bob. Listener since the 70s while living in Green Bay. Can we expect the return of the BS Love Counselor? Best of luck to you. We've got that scheduled for the 12th of never. This is from 847. Happy to say I'm a new listener, enjoying the show, learning a bunch of things like what pot to try. Well, we're providing a great community service. And what fake burger not to try. And now I'm on a wait list for that sleep machine you were talking about. You're very educational. Keep up the good work. A new listener, John Holzer. Yes, I did just want to hear my name on the air. All right, glad we could satisfy you. Coming up, we're going to be talking to Karen Conti, who you hear on the radio, and she has got an update for us and a little more of an explanation as to what's going on in the Harvey Weinstein trial that started in New York yesterday. Also, there's a lot to talk about in terms of new marijuana laws. And R. Kelly in the news again because of the TV series, and there's a lot going on in that department, and Karen will go over all of that. Let's see, that's coming up at about 6:39 or so. And then, as we mentioned, the U.S. and Iraq are reporting no casualties after the Iranian airstrikes. President Trump is supposed to address the nation today, but they have not announced the time for that, but we will cover that here on the radio. So stay with us. You won't miss a thing. In the weather department, we were talking yesterday about how we're going to have wind chills of zero at this time today. And it's cold because of the wind, but not quite as bad as they thought. And the good news is that messy stuff won't affect any rush hours this week. That's supposed to be on Saturday. And if we can get through today and tonight, you're looking at like 48 on Thursday and 45 on Friday. So that's good news. Okay, let's see. What other old business do we want to take care of here? I think we've updated the texts. And, a reminder in the health department that I didn't get to there a few minutes ago about diet soda. Don't we all know this already? having diet and soft drinks doesn't mean you will lose weight. Now it's an official court ruling. Diet soda doesn't lead to weight loss, and beverage companies that sell diet sodas are not making a weight loss promise by including the word diet on their soft drinks. A federal court has ruled on this. We all know now that you're probably better off having a real Coke than the Diet Coke, right? Beverage companies that sell diet sodas are not making a weight loss promise by including the word diet on their soft drinks, according to the federal court. And the decision was handed down in San Francisco. It updated an earlier dismissal of a class action suit against the makers of Dr. Pepper. A woman named Shauna Bacara brought the lawsuit. She argued that she'd struggled with obesity since childhood and thought that drinking Diet Dr. Pepper would help her lose or maintain a healthy weight. She also argued that using fit and attractive models in diet soda advertising was deceptive, since drinking soda can lead to weight gain. Just because some consumers may unreasonably interpret the term differently does not render the use of diet in a soda's brand name false or deceptive, according to the judge writing in that decision. Diet soft drinks are common in the marketplace, and the prevalent understanding of the term in that context is that the diet version of a soft drink has fewer calories than its regular counterpart. So now it's legal, and as I say, you're better off with the real thing than the diet drinks because of what they put in there chemically. Of course, I went to the dentist yesterday, and long story short, I can't have any crunchy, chewy, sticky foods or small pieces of anything till Friday. So I'm living on smoothies, milkshakes, and the healthy green drink that Mrs. Surratt makes for me in the morning, which is, it's got all these vegetables and vitamins in there, but it does taste like my front lawn. However,
did you have a root canal?
No, I didn't have a root canal, but I got something going on in one tooth, and they had to put something, they injected some antibiotic-like substance in there, and it has to be undisturbed around the tooth for 3 days.
So you can add green stuff to it instead.
Yeah, anything that's soft and mushy is okay. And I'm coming back from the dentist, and the office is in Water Tower Place, and as I leave, I'm walking by Food Life and the Mighty Nice Grill and Do Right Donuts and Garrett's Popcorn. Yeah. Talk about torture. All right, let's get you updated on everything you need to know on this Wednesday morning, and then we'll talk about the stories in the news that have Karen Conti, the legal expert, commenting. But first, .637, Bob Surratt Morning Radio Show and Louis Vuitton Resale Shop. Please don't ask me how I got the merchandise. Just enjoy the savings. We're going to talk law with Karen Conti here in just a few minutes. And also coming up at about 6:45, we will check in with Matt McGarry, who's an ABC News correspondent based in Iraq, and we'll get the latest on the Middle East situation. First, what was your situation waking up this morning? Was it waking up before the alarm, an alarm clock, a gentle noise, or perhaps a motorcycle? Two aldermen will ask their colleagues to kick off 2020 by cracking down on noise made by motorcycles along North Lakeshore Drive and throughout the city. Alderman Brian Hopkins of the 2nd Ward will finally get a hearing on the proposal that he introduced more than 6 months ago to install noise monitors along Lakeshore Drive to measure the sleep-preventing racket created by the motorcycles without mufflers, which flock to the scenic road, especially in the summertime. But you hear this everywhere all year, and sometimes cars, and of course in the good weather, motorcycles. That measure is set to be considered by the City Council's Public Safety Committee. A 2017 state law, authored by State Representative Sarah Feigenholz, permits the city to install the monitors, which are similar to the devices that measure the roar of jets taking off and landing at O'Hare and at Midway. And also another story that caught our eye this morning, if I can find it here, has to do with something that I don't like, running. And I do my, you know, half-hour, three-mile jog occasionally, and I think, well, you know, that's enough. Don't need any more than that. And I always watch the marathons and see the people collapsing at the end and think, do I want to do that? And I once asked a doctor about this, and I said, you know what, I really don't want a hip replacement or a knee replacement. Should I keep running? And he just said to me, how do you feel now? Does anything bother you when you do your little run? And I said, no. And then he said, well, we'll keep running. Well, there's a new study that suggests running a marathon for the first time could actually help you live longer by reversing some of the effects of aging on the body. Let's see, this study involved 138 healthy first-time marathon runners, and they were training and completing the London Marathon. And all of this running apparently was associated with a 4-year reduction in their vascular age. That means they found marathon training reversed the age-related stiffening of the body's main artery, the aorta, and helped reduce blood pressure. The study's senior author says she doesn't think the health benefits are unique to running a marathon. She said the key takeaway is to set a training goal and structure and stick to it. The study was published in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology.
Still not interested in running a marathon.
No, I'm not
going to do it.
I'm not convinced either.
I get inspired every year, but then I go, no. 3 miles is fine.
Yeah, well, you know what? That scene at the end of every marathon gets to me, and, you know, people need to be resuscitated, and they're collapsing. So, I don't know. As I said, I'll stick to my 3-mile, 30-minute run.
Yeah, I know people that run 2 or 3 of them in a year.
Oh, yeah, I know.
It's just crazy.
Really. And how about the triathlons?
Well, those are worse.
And as promised, we're keeping you updated on all the Middle East developments. And with us right now from ABC News in Iraq is Matt McGarry. Matt, as most of us went to bed last night, we heard about the airstrikes, and we heard about the president's tweet. Bring us up to the minute now. What's the latest?
That's right. Good morning to you. Overnight, the Iranians made good on their threats that they had been launching at the U.S. for several days by launching a barrage of missiles aimed primarily at 2 military installations here in Iraq. Those are installations that will be housing U.S. troops as well as some coalition forces and their Iraqi partner troops. One of the main target for the strikes was Al Asad Air Base, which is in the west of Iraq. And also some of the missiles were launched at the Erbil military base at the Erbil International Airport, which is only about 2 miles from where we are. So we did hear a couple of booms last night, which initially alerted us to this strike. And the local government here in Erbil, Iraq, is telling us that 3 missiles were launched at that base. 2 of them were shot down by anti-aircraft batteries, and 1 did get through, but luckily it did not explode upon landing.
Matt, how significant is the fact that these were ballistic missiles?
Well, that is very significant because ballistic missiles carry a much greater explosive payload than the rockets that we see are kind of launched on a regular basis into the green zone in Baghdad and against some of these military installations that we've seen happening over the last few months. So this is certainly designed to be a big hit. The Iranians did want to make a large statement with this, but we're finding out this morning that there were no casualties reported, no American casualties, nor with casualties amongst coalition troops or Iraqi troops. And we're also, ABC News is learning this morning that a lot of the troops were hiding in bunkers before the strikes began, which leads to indicate that there was maybe some warning. We are being told by sources in the Iraqi government that they did receive an advance warning. We don't know for sure if they passed it on to the Americans, but we are apt to presume that they probably did.
President Trump's tweet we mentioned said that all is well and they're assessing the damages and the casualties that have taken place so far. So good, and everyone is waiting for the president to address the nation. That's supposed to happen this morning. No time set on that yet, correct?
That's correct. You know, of course, you know better than me, it's still very early in the U.S. So we expect sometime in the next few hours, hopefully we'll hear from the president. But, you know, at this point, without any American casualties and without any serious reported damage, and indicating that maybe this advance warning was given. Hopefully, this was just a signal from the Iranians to try and save face with their own people and also, you know, just to be able to save face with the rest of the world. And hopefully this will kind of ratchet down this crisis and maybe avert any further escalation.
We hope for the best. It's Matt McGarry, ABC News in Iraq. Matt, thanks for the update. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
It is 6:49 right now. And coming up, we're going to talk to Karen Conti about a couple of stories of interest legally. And, oh, okay. All right. We'll get to that momentarily. And in the meantime, a reminder about things like weather and traffic and more mundane situations. We're going to be colder today than yesterday. High of 28, low of 25 tonight. And then we're back to the good stuff. 48 Thursday, 45 Friday. And then Saturday now, they say, a bit messy. So there you have the latest. And again, when the president does speak, you will hear it live here on WGN Radio. And we are waiting for Karen Conti to check in with us here. I want to talk a little bit about the Harvey Weinstein trial. Also, R. Kelly and new marijuana laws. And that's coming up momentarily right here on WGN. Our phone number and our text, 312-981-7200. We have a family four-pack of passes to the Lake Home and Cabin Show coming up, and that's this weekend at the Schaumburg Convention Center, Chicagoland's only show specializing in vacation homes and the second home lifestyle. Details at lakehomeandcabinshow.com. A four-pack for, well, let's do for old time's sake, I'll do the 15th caller. I didn't bring the music radio touchstone with me here to WGN, but there are prizes, and if you're caller number 15, we'll give you the family four-pack. So just call if you can use it this weekend out in Schaumburg. You ready to call? All right. The number is 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Caller 15 gets the family four-pack. All right, here is Karen Conti. Good morning, Karen. We understand that actually you know somebody who's representing Harvey Weinstein. What's the latest on this?
Hi, Bob. How are you doing? Yes, two lawyers were selected by the Weinstein team to represent him in New York. And it's kind of interesting that that team would choose lawyers in Chicago, and there are obviously plenty of good lawyers in New York. But these two lawyers have worked together on rape cases in particular and kind of have a little bit of a niche in this area. And so I think one of them is a female, one of them is a male, and I think that was the reason that he did that.
Well, what's the defense here for him? What are they going to be saying?
Clearly the defense is consensual sex. My understanding of the facts is that everyone knew who Harvey Weinstein was, and they wanted a piece of him. They wanted to be with him. They wanted him to curry favor on them, and the idea is going to be that they knowingly walked into the situation and they consented to what happened. And that's really the only defense that I can think of and that has been talked about that would have some traction.
And what are the chances that he will not be convicted? Because I've read so much about this and heard so much about how once this gets into court legally, he's going to get off on these charges. What do you think?
You know, it's a hard one. The whole key here is a fair jury. If the jury doesn't know any of the facts and doesn't know about the myriad of women who have made the same claims, and the jury is going to look at beyond a reasonable doubt, yes, he could get off of these charges. I mean, you have a situation where women are in hotel rooms, women are actresses. I think a lot of people can look at women and say, you knew what was going to happen. How could you say you didn't consent? I think that attitude, depending on who the jurors are, can really win the day for a defendant. Again, I'm not saying one way or the other that it's right or wrong. Right. I'm just saying beyond a reasonable doubt is a very, very high standard.
Because of the TV series, a lot of talk now about R. Kelly again. What's the latest there?
Well, you know, I've been looking at the R. Kelly case much like this Weinstein case, and that's been interesting. So yesterday, the trial started in New York for Weinstein, and they brought new charges in L.A. And I was thinking, this is just like the R. Kelly case. For years, R. Kelly had these allegations against him. Same with Weinstein. And all of a sudden now, because of some publicity and the women are coming forward, and now one prosecutor takes a chance and brings the charges, now we have the layering of charges. And believe me, we're going to have other charges probably brought against Weinstein. But the same thing happened with Kelly. He's got two cases in Chicago, one in federal court, one in state court. He's got one in New York. He's got one in Minnesota. I mean, he's being charged in different states, and the chances that he's going to lose on at least one of them are pretty high.
And finally, are we up to date now on pot and marijuana laws and what it means for us in the workplace and also behind the wheel?
Yeah, I think those are going to be some evolving things that we're going to have to get the kinks out of. You know, listen, your employer can tell you you can't smoke pot, and they can drug test you, and if you test positive, they can fire you. Just because you can't be prosecuted for it in Illinois doesn't mean you can do it either in the workplace or at home while you're employed by a no-tolerance employer. So make sure that everybody out there knows their policy handbook, knows what the employer's expectations are, because that doesn't give you free rein to use. And certainly in the car, you can't be impaired. It's the same thing as alcohol. You can't be impaired when you're driving. Whether you have a medical marijuana license or a recreation you're using recreationally, you cannot be impaired. You can't have it in the passenger seat. You have to have it in a container, in the trunk. And you can't cross state lines if that state does not have a legal law yet. So those are things that we all need to look at and make sure we understand.
Do we know yet how the police are going to handle this? Because there's no real test for driving under the influence of pot, is there?
No, there isn't. And there's a saliva test that they can use. It's not very accurate. It can pick up traces of things from before. So, no, I think that we're going to see developments probably in the next couple of years. But they can give you a blood test. They have to get a warrant for that. They have to do it within 2 hours of stopping you. And I think that people, you know, you can just deny it. You can say, I'm not going to take it. But then you lose your license for a year. It's the same as the alcohol thing. You have to comply with their tests or you are going to lose your license summarily for at least a year.
We were talking yesterday about O'Hare and Midway and flying. If you have marijuana, that's a no-no, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And, you know, because if you look at it, remember, again, another layer of this is that the federal law still prohibits the possession of marijuana. So we have the state saying it's okay, but the federal government can always come in and say, you know, this is illegal. So when you're flying, you're dealing with federal laws, and the federal laws say you can't have it, and so you can't have it on board.
Karen Conte from Conte Law, always informative. Good talking to you, Karen. You have a great day.
You too, Bob.
People waking up this morning a little bit nervous because of the Middle East situation. Let's get the latest now from ABC News in Washington. Karen Travers is with us. Good morning, Karen. How you doing?
Good morning. Good. How are you?
All right. First off, any word on when the president is going to address the nation today? You're there at the White House. What are you hearing?
Nothing yet from the White House. They will not give us a sense as to where and when the president will speak, but he did say last night in that tweet that he would do it this morning, so we'll see. The president doesn't have any public events on his schedule today, but we are standing by for whenever the White House says he will give those remarks. Last night he tweeted a pretty chipper tweet, given the aggressive tone he'd been taking over the past couple of days. The president writing in that tweet, quote, "all is well," with an exclamation point, and later added, "so far so good regarding American casualties and damages. And we're being told by our sources that there are no reports of American or Iraqi casualties, and the damages also not anything significant.
The latest headline now about how the administration is viewing this there in Washington is that there's a growing belief that Iran intentionally missed areas with U.S. troops. Anything to that? What are you hearing?
There's been no specific reaction to that point by the administration, but certainly our military analysts that we've been talking to say, given where these strikes took place, that there were no casualties, that they were aimed at U.S. military bases and coalition troops, but these are sprawling sites, so there's certainly a way to do it, send a message, but not actually escalate the conflict with American or Iraqi casualties. I think our military analyst Steve Ganyard this morning on Good Morning America put it. He said that everybody seems to want to calm this situation down, and that last night, when everything seemed to be on the brink of all-out war, by the end of the night, when people went to bed here in the U.S., it almost seemed like both sides had retreated to their corners as quickly as they could. Now, the question will be what, if any, action the president takes in retaliation. He had been threatening it for several days now. He said just 3 days ago that if Iran hit American assets, they will be hit very fast and very hard. At this point, that has not happened. We'll see what the president says today and what tone he strikes.
And one final question before we let you get back to work there in Washington, Karen. I don't know if folks were up late enough to hear about the Ayatollah's comment that this was a slap in the face. Are the analysts saying that, are they interpreting that to mean there's more to come? What did that mean? Slap in the face.
I think the tweet from the foreign minister is very important. He said last night that Iran took and concluded proportionate measures in self-defense. And Foreign Minister Zarif added, we do not see escalation or war. But took and concluded proportionate measure is very important, according to our experts in the region, saying this was their response. This was their retaliation for the strike that killed Qasem Soleimani last week. They quickly took credit. But that could be it. It's not day one of what could be an extended series of strikes. Now, again, the question, the ball's in the president's court at this point as to what he does, but our folks are saying this is a sign from Iran that they want to dial this down.
Karen Travers, ABC News at the White House. Appreciate the update, Karen. You have a good day.
Thanks, you too.
It is 7:14. We don't want to let too much time go by here in the morning without keeping you updated on what's going on. And again, no time set for the president's address to the nation, but whenever that happens, you'll hear it live here on WGN.
And Bob, one other note on this. I know there was concern about the use of the ballistic missiles in this attack. I listened to that Steve Ganyard interview that she referenced, and he talked about being able to better guide a missile to a location. One of these ballistic missiles, as opposed to a rocket that just sort of is lobbed over the border, the missile could have been guided to one of those places that, you know, wouldn't have caused much damage or casualties. So we'll have to watch how that kind of flushes out with all of the details later today.
Yeah, everybody's a little nervous this morning. Hopefully we'll bring you the information you need to know that will put your mind at ease a little bit. Let's hope for the best. We have some extremely local news coming up.
When it comes to the weather, we all want to know, what did Skilling say? Watch for updated forecasts from Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling, weeknights on WGN-TV.
It's 7:19, and how about some extremely local news before we give you the latest update on the Middle East situation? Jen Sabella is the Director of Strategy and the co-founder of Block Club Chicago, and here she is. Good morning, Jen. How you doing?
Good morning, Bob. I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good, and we're following some local stories in addition to keeping our eye on what's happening with the Iran situation. And again, President Trump is going to address the nation, but we don't have a time for that yet. We'll cover that live whenever that is, though. Meantime, let's start with the breaking coyote news. What's the latest on this, Jen?
So we just talked about this yesterday, and then a couple hours later, the fire department got word that there was a coyote in the lake near, right on Lakeshore Drive, the downtown, a little bit north. So the fire department and animal care and control were able to rescue the coyote. It was about 11 o'clock yesterday morning. He is being held at animal care and control until a wildlife rehabilitation group can come and rescue him. Actually dug up some more stats. There are about 2,000 coyotes in Cook County. So they're really out and about right now just hunting for food. And the one thing animal care and control is saying is do not feed them. They may look hungry. They may look cute to you. But feeding them has led to attacks on people.
Stay away.
Suggest you don't do it. Yeah.
We mentioned when we explained Block Club Chicago yesterday, and we're happy you're joining us here in the morning for some of this neighborhood news, that you have reporters that are in these neighborhoods talking about what people there are actually concerned about. And one of the things going on now is this CVS pharmacy closing. Tell us about that.
Yes. So in Auburn Gresham, there's a CVS at 79th and Halstead, and it kind of abruptly closed. CVS announced that they'd be closing some 46 stores nationwide. They blamed underperformance on that in May, but they never said they were going to be closing this store when they made that announcement in May. So when customers of the store, specifically the pharmacy, showed up to the 79th and Halstead location and saw that it was empty, a lot of the staff had been laid off and there were signs on the door that was closing, they immediately contacted the alderman and demanded answers. I don't know, there, a few months ago something similar happened on the south side in Calumet Heights, where Walgreens shut down a pharmacy. And, you know, in a lower income neighborhood, or in a neighborhood, this specific area is surrounded by senior centers. So there are a lot of senior housing and people don't drive. They're used to, you know, being able to walk across the street to get their prescriptions filled. So they're very upset. And they're calling for a possible boycott. But, you know, CVS says that they let the alderman know in advance. The alderman disputes that. So, you know, the neighbors are upset, but we don't have any information about them staying open right now. They're just telling customers to go to a location that's about a mile away.
And now the marijuana story of the day, a weed spa opening up, really?
This is really interesting. So there's a former alderman, Amaya Pawar, who used to be an alderman up on the north side. He has gotten into the weed game. He's partnered with Scott Wiener, who owns 50/50 Restaurant Group, a lot of bars and restaurants in the Wicker Park, Bucktown area that are very popular. And they're hoping to open a weed spa at 1914 West Chicago Avenue. Initially, the plan called for a spa, which would offer like wellness treatments, like acupuncture, massage, and some of these treatments using cannabis oils and lotions and potions and things like that. Topicals is what they're called in the dispensary world. And the restaurant idea was scrapped, so they were going to include a restaurant, spa, and dispensary. But they met with neighbors, and neighbors were like, yeah, let's do it. So they have some hoops to jump through. They have to get approval from the city and get a license. But the spa and dispensary would be right by Ruth's Pizza on Chicago Avenue. It's a pretty bustling stretch of West Town, pretty hip neighborhood. So I think they're going for kind of a fancy weed experience.
But the project has a long way to go, right?
Right. So they have approval of the neighborhood, which usually when the neighborhood groups sign off on something, the alderman will sign off on it. Then they would have to go through the city process of getting approval. With the people, there's a lot of heavy hitters on this team. There's a labor union president. There's a lot of philanthropy groups. There's a medical director of the Chicago Marathon. A lot of big names are involved in this specific project. So they, I think, will be able to navigate the city system a little better than maybe some others.
And finally, talk about the 606, Jen. And first, for people who aren't familiar with it, since this jogging, walking, bicycle trail has opened up, there has been great improvement along that route. And now there's some controversy. Back up for a second, though, and tell us where the 606 is and what it is for folks who aren't familiar with it yet.
So the 606 runs on abandoned Metro tracks. It goes from Bucktown to all the way to West Humboldt Park. So it runs east-west, And it was years in the making, and people were really excited about it. It's really improved, you know, commuting for people, especially bicyclists who can stay out of traffic. And it's also become a big destination for people who want to build condos, apartment buildings, like near the trail. It allows like access, you know, to a running route every day. There's a lot of greenery and like park space right there. But the controversy has been people who've lived in these neighborhoods for many years are getting priced out. The more development in this area, the higher the property taxes are getting, the higher the prices are getting for rent. It's just become a destination. It's kind of like living near the CTA stop or living near, you know, someplace with a really great view. So aldermen in the neighborhood are, in the surrounding neighborhoods, are proposing a freeze on development for 14 months, mostly to just study what has happened to the population there. Specifically in Logan Square, the neighborhood's lost thousands of Latino residents in the last 5 years as the neighborhood changes. A lot more white residents are moving in, a lot more wealthy residents are moving into the neighborhood. So they hope that this time will allow them to put something in place that allows longtime residents to stay, but it's also friendly to new people who want to come into the neighborhood.
Last time I was walking along that 606 trail, I was marveling at all the improvements that were made on the housing on either side of the 606. And, you know, the thought I had was this is fantastic for the city because everybody's building extra decks and fixing up their places since the 606 opened. I would think this would be good news for most people, wouldn't it?
Right. You know, a lot of people feel that way. A lot of the neighbors do not want to see development stop. They don't want to see a half-built building sit there, you know, vacant. They don't want to see a rundown lot just sit there. But what the aldermen are saying is, let's be thoughtful about this. They initially wanted to put in a demolition permit and like a demolition fee in place. There was speculation on whether that was even legal. So they're going this route. It still would have to be approved by the full city council, and there is opposition in the neighborhood from the development community and from some neighbors. But there is also another group of neighbors who are saying, you know, we need to be brought into the conversation, and there needs to be some protections for people who lived in the neighborhood a long time.
That's the latest from Block Club Chicago. I like to call it extremely local news. And Jen, quickly for people who missed our explanation, Block Club Chicago consists of a network of neighborhood reporters sort of embedded in those areas, correct?
Exactly. So our neighborhood reporters live and work in the neighborhoods they cover. They're out at all the community meetings. They usually do, you know, meet and greets with neighbors. They'll tweet out, hey, we're at this cafe today. Come pitch us your story. So we're really on the ground every day, paying attention to what's happening on a local level.
We look forward to talking to you tomorrow morning. Thanks, Jen. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Bob. Have a good one.
Yeah, you too. Good morning, 7:39. Andy Mazur is here covering sports for Dave Ennett today. And Andy, I need some explanation here on this baseball story involving Chris Bryant.
Okay.
So the grievance from a 2015 dispute remains unresolved. And this is going to sort of determine what the Cubs do in terms of making moves and possibly trading Chris Bryant. The word is not until they get a Bryant decision can they consider any major moves. Okay, first, I need to understand what the
grievance is.
Why it hasn't been resolved. How can it be resolved? When will it be resolved?
Okay, so the first thing is, in 2015, when he was brought up, there's a certain amount of time that goes by in the beginning of a season where you can bring a guy up and still own his service time for six seasons. So the Cubs waited until the middle of April to bring him up in 2015, which is part of the collective bargaining agreement, which is legal. All the teams do it.
Right.
You know, the White Sox avoided that situation with Eloy Jimenez and also with Luis Robert by signing them to long-term deals, basically locking them up for 6 years rather than having to worry about service time when they come up. So Chris Bryant and his camp decided that they wanted to say, well, listen, they messed with my career. They didn't bring me up when I was supposed to be up at the beginning of the season. So the grievance, if it goes in Chris Bryant's favor, he will be awarded free agency following this upcoming season. If not, and if it goes to the Cubs, he is their property till 2021. So what they want to do is, if they're going to lose him after 2020 and not be able to afford to sign him, they want to trade him to get some value for him before they just lose him for nothing.
So if they want to move him, they can't until this is resolved?
Well, I mean, they'd rather do it if they know that he's going to be a free agent following this year, rather than if they have him for one more year, you have another offseason to be able to do that, or you have a trade deadline where you can do that as well. But I think that it becomes a little more clear when they know which way the arbitrator is going to rule, and apparently that decision is not going to come out for a little while yet.
So that's why they say that as far as not just moves involving Chris Bryant, but moves involving anybody, yeah, they kind of are stuck until they know what's going on here.
Yeah, because they've been mentioned a couple of times for the services of Nolan Arenado, who is one of the all-stars for the Colorado Rockies, who signed an extension, I believe it was before last season started. And he's locked up now for a few years, and the Rockies would like to rid themselves of his salary. Cubs are thinking, okay, well, listen, if we have to lose Bryant, let's trade for this guy. And again, it's kind of all being held up because of this decision.
Southsiders making some noise by adding Steve Cishek, who was a very effective Cubs relief pitcher last year. They're saying 1 year, $6 million deal. They haven't done the official announcement yet, right, though, have they?
No, they have not. They're waiting for the physical and making sure all the contract language is good, and hopefully he'll be in the fold here within today, for maybe today or tomorrow officially. But it's a great add to the bullpen.
He was good last year.
Yeah, he's been good for a while. He's a 10-year vet with an ERA under 2.7 for his career. So that's not a bad little job there.
As far as the Blackhawks are concerned, they lost 2-1 last night, and unfortunately the injury list grows, doesn't it?
Yes, Dylan Strome is added to that list. He fell awkwardly on his ankle yesterday and then went into the boards, and he got up very slowly, very gingerly, limped over toward the bench, if you can limp on ice skates, and he did. And then went right back into the dressing room there. So they're going to have an update on him later on today, find out exactly how severe that injury is. Hopefully it's not long-term, because Dylan Strome's been playing some pretty good hockey of late.
Andy Mazur, thank you, sir.
You got it.
There is a lot of concern about a cyber attack from Iran, because they have a history of this. And we have a cyber attack expert with us to talk a little bit about this issue. Ed Peters is with Data Discovery Sciences. They specialize in analyzing data about cyber threats. And Ed, first of all, thanks for being with us this morning. It's a busy one, I know. And how likely is it that Iran will cyber attack the U.S. in some way?
Well, Iran cyber attacks the U.S. maybe probably every day.
Really?
There's low levels of threats, and they're constantly at this. And this is the type of threat, as opposed to an armed conflict that winds up being escalated if somebody does something. But this low level of engagement is perpetual right now and continual. And that's really where we find ourselves. I mean, every day they're hacking something. The United States receives 20 million hacking attempts a day. So over this period of time, you can assume that they're at it continually, trying to get something done and trying to do something that disrupts us, and our economy.
Give us an example of a cyber attack from Iran, what they've done in the past, what people expect them to do in the future. They attack the infrastructure of our country, don't they?
Yeah, there's really two things they could do. You know, one is attack something from a information technology standpoint, let's say a bank, a communication facility, something that might disrupt service and cause a lot of stress and inconvenience, but not necessarily loss of life or property. The second type of attack is discussing an operational technology attack, where it could be a dam, a power plant, anything, a refinery, something that has industrial controls. And what they like to focus on there is hacking into the system, gaining control of something they can do, let's say to open a dam gate, which case there would be actual physical damage. Now, that's what you hear on television when the commentators talk about kinetic attacks. That means something that converts the physical force that actually endangers lives and property. So they have a database they've been developing, it's believed since 2015, where they're looking at vulnerable infrastructure targets in the U.S. where they could perform one of those attacks, and they're at it all the time.
What can we do to prevent this? What do we do to prevent this?
Well, the government has done a great job of getting out in front of this and actually looking at various infrastructure segments, if you will, and sectors in the economy, and then working with those sectors to actually understand the threats, understand how to respond to the threats, understand how to share information about them, and quickly restore service if that's the type of attack that's undertaken. So all of this comes out of the Office of the Homeland Security and the Director of National Intelligence, where when they receive information about these types of threats, they'll actually, you know, of course, whatever they can declassify and share as quickly as possible with the various both public and private areas sectors, and then work with them to understand what to do and how to move forward.
I read that since 2015, Iran has been developing a database of vulnerable systems in the U.S. in order to damage our economy here. So it seems like we have a pretty good lead on exactly what they're doing. And you say the government has been on top of this. They're doing a good job.
The government's been doing, you know, and our Homeland Security, the FBI, and other cyber groups, you know, have actually worked to form what amounts to be a national cyber intelligence group. It's called the Cyber Threat Integration and Intelligence, where they've been working to understand the threats and then actually in some cases, or in many, run drills periodically for power plants and dams, and then understand what vulnerabilities they found and how to close them, and constantly working to upgrade people's capabilities. Now, at the same time, the Iranians, and it's, remember, it's not just Iran that may be doing this. It could easily be some of their proxies. It could be people looking like they're working on their behalf. And it could be other actors as well. Iran, North Korea are known to be very closely working together with these things. It could be China, all of which are focused on that same issue, this constant engagement to cause some kind of physical harm to the economy or find out where the vulnerabilities are so that they can employ them at a later time.
Are our financial services, banks, and so forth, targets number one?
Well, it's hard to know which one's number one, but you would have to assume that anything that is critical for our economy, you know, banking, oil refineries, power grids, the things that make the economy move on a daily basis, would be massive targets for them so that they could cause the maximum amount of distress to the American public as possible. Now, if it ever moves to the point of something that causes what they call kinetic damage, which is loss of life, you know, you would imagine that the response would move out of the cyberspace and into something much more physical, and that's something I'm sure they would want to avoid.
As we mentioned, Dr. Ed Peters is an award-winning executive and technology entrepreneur. He leads Data Discovery Services out of Dallas. Give us a little quick idea of what you do on a daily basis, who your clients are. You probably can't reveal that, can you?
Well, we won't name names, but we work with healthcare. We work with electricity companies. We work with a number of banks and institutions. And we do two things. We focus on, one, knowing that it all starts with data. Where are the potential points of vulnerability in your organization? Now, there's perimeter attacks, and there's also inside the perimeter attacks where somebody might be taking data from your organization that they're not authorized to take. Remember, not all of these attacks are simply to deny service. Some could be looking to steal intellectual property. Some could be, you know, looking to understand control mechanisms. All of these things happen at the same time, and all are all are discoverable by having a great understanding of data. So we do that to understand where the actual attacks might be and lock up, if you will, the data so it can be properly secured, and putting data governance policies around that. And we also use that same data as we focus on processes and mining the data from processes to understand where we might be able to actually increase your return on investment through improved automation and what we call intelligent automation.
Before I let you go, Ed, could you stoop so low as to give technically challenged folks like me some advice for keeping information safe at home?
Oh, absolutely. Look, here's what we all have to remember is that all of these apps and these devices that we put into our environments to increase our convenience do that at a cost. I call this the cost of convenience. So, for instance, the Ring doorbell situation is perfect. You know, it's a case where somebody broke inside of a network, gained access to somebody's Ring doorbell system, and because it wasn't properly secured, were able to move forward. I call these digital doors, meaning all these apps on your phone, these are interfaces or critical interfaces that allow people to come in, and then once they get in, to just wreak havoc everywhere. So it's important that we just follow the basic rules here. As good digital citizens, that we want, you know, proper email addresses that are, you know, make sure they're have good passwords, and that we don't just go and fall for phishing attacks or send our digital information to somebody who asks for it on the phone. Always check the email address. Mm-hmm. Secondly, you know, lock your digital doors. Strong passwords, a password, two-factor authentication would have stopped a number of these Ring situations. And, you know, when you have a chance to use thumbprint or, you know, in some cases, facial recognition, what they call bio-authentication, you know, take those steps. I mean, think about what the Army just did in allowing TikTok as an application for the troops. Mm. That was produced by someone in China and most likely has malware inside of it and can be used to unlock other applications. So we have to be very careful about what we put on our system.
My head's
and
exploding.
Really be digitally aware.
Yeah. I'm going back to my abacus, Dr. Ed Peters, security expert, CEO of Data Discovery Sciences. Thanks, Ed. Appreciate it. How you doing on time? It's 10 after 8. We will continue to update the Middle East story. Our next scheduled news at 8:30. But if the president should address the nation before that, of course, we'll carry it live here on WGN. The latest headline, Iraq actually gave the United States advance warning of Iran's attack. So more on that coming up. For now, it's entertainment news time. Over to Channel 9.
You better not interrupt my segment.
That's all I can say. No one would dare. Good morning, Dean Richards. How you doing?
Bob, how are you today?
Not bad. It's nice to look out here at a beautiful sunrise and stay warm. It's a cold one. And I know you've got some concert news, among other goodies to report today. What's going on?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like Rascal Flatts has been around that long. It's actually been 20 years, but they have announced their farewell concert. I guess 20 years is enough. They announced that they're going to be doing a tour this summer that is called the Life is a Highway Tour. It's going to start in June, but will include a show at the Hollywood Casino Amphitheater in Tinley Park on June the 25th. Pre-sale tickets are on sale through Rascal Flatts All Access Fan Club. They have not announced a date yet when regular ticket sales, general ticket sales, will go on sale for everybody else just yet. So if you're a fan, keep an eye out for that. But also, kind of one of Chicago's very own, I guess Rockford's very own, you might say, Cheap Trick, just announced they are going to be touring with Rod Stewart this summer. They're going to be the opening act for Rod Stewart's tour that will end up in the Chicago area. This will be going to the Hollywood Casino Amphitheater, Tinley Park, September the 5th. Bob, I know you like to plan ahead.
I do. That's quite a double bill.
Your calendar fills up. But right, exactly. Cheap Trick and Rod Stewart.
Cheap Trick should be, they should be the leader, you know? Rod should be...
Should be solo.
Yeah.
Should be solo. I'm not sure.
It's kind of weird.
Yeah. I love Cheap Trick for some reason. I don't know why. Sorry, Rod Stewart fans. His voice grinds me. It's like some kind of a chemical reaction.
I know. You want to clear your throat when you hear mine.
It's gotten very weak, too.
I don't know what happened. I used to love his songs, but I can't take him anymore. So
don't you think he's sexy anymore?
I do still think he's sexy.
In the lawsuit department today, we have Jennifer Lopez, don't we?
Yeah, she's... did you... why am I even asking, Bob, if you went to see the movie Hustler? I don't know. Maybe you did.
No, I didn't.
You go to see a lot of these...
not that one.
Marianne makes you go see a lot of these movies.
Yeah, that's true, but not that one.
This is the movie where she played a stripper. And it was based, the whole movie was based on a New York Magazine article that was focused around a woman by the name of Samantha Barbish. Now, the Samantha Barbish has filed a lawsuit against Jennifer Lopez and her production company, saying that they used her story without permission and that they defamed her in the process. The lawsuit says that Lopez's character clearly depicts her and her life, but also added false portrayals of using illegal drugs. So I can't imagine that there wasn't, you know, some arrangement. I mean, there's clearly a magazine article about somebody, and they make a movie about it. I can't believe that they didn't, you know, that all the legal people that are involved in this didn't take the proper steps with this. But she claims that Samantha Barbish says that they did not. She's looking for damages and also wants Lopez's company to turn over every single copy of this movie that has been made so far. So, Bob, I know you have three or four of them at home. If you would send them back to J-Lo, please.
With pleasure. When I get to the DGA nominations, and also a couple of clips from Stephen Colbert last night that are of a particular interest to Chicagoans. More with Dean Richards coming up.
For News at 10, watch WGN. Mike Amater, Joe Donlin, Dan Rohn, and Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling. For TV News at 10, watch Chicago's very own WGN.
8:20, and we're talking to Dean Richards on the entertainment beat over at Channel 9. We mentioned the Directors Guild nominations, and this is sort of an important one.
This is clearly an indication of what will happen at the Oscars for the Best Director category, because at the Oscars, to vote in that category for Best Director, you might have to be a director. And that's basically what the Directors Guild is about. So when the DGA nominations come out, it's pretty significant. Sam Mendes, who won this past Sunday for not only Best Motion Picture Drama, but also Best Director, was nominated for his movie 1917 that opens in even more theaters in the Chicago area this coming Friday, by the way. But also nominated Martin Scorsese for The Irishman, Quentin Tarantino for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the Korean director who won for Best Foreign Film at the Golden Globes, Bong Joon-ho, for his movie Parasite, and also for the movie Jojo Rabbit, director Taika Waititi. It's the year of interesting names.
Yes, you're being tested this morning.
Taika Waititi. That's how I'm pronouncing it. I'm sticking with it.
Nobody's going to correct you.
Right.
So are people upset with Nicki Minaj? What's going on with her?
Well, no, people are upset at the Madame Tussauds Wax Museum in Berlin. They unveiled a Nicki Minaj wax figure there. And it allegedly depicts Nicki on all fours, wearing a very scantily clothed, wearing a lot of chains, I mean, that is her look, that is her costume style, that is her attitude. And then you get to her face, and this wax figure looks nothing like Nicki Minaj. That's what the fans are upset about.
I see.
You know, one fan tweeted, don't they get Google in Germany so they can actually have seen a picture of her to see what her face looks like? You can see it. It's posted all over the web, so you can see it.
Sex and the City fans are happy about something, aren't they?
Yeah. Samantha Jones is coming back to TV. Actress Kim Cattrall, who has been off TV since Sex and the City went off the air. She did all six seasons of the show on HBO. Think about how groundbreaking that was and how much television has changed in just 6 years. Remember back in the day when Sex and the City was so mind-blowing because it was, you know, they said anything and they did things you'd never seen on TV. It was that and Sopranos on Sunday night. And now the television, you know, land has opened up into a new golden age. But, you know, with Sex, she was on Sex and the City. She did those two movies, the Sex and the City movies, and pretty much has been off the scene since then. She is getting her own first network TV show that'll be called Filthy Rich. It'll be on Fox. She says that I'm 63 years old now, and I can relate to this new character. They are both in the same stage of life.
Yeah, talking about all the television, I think anybody watching the Golden Globes was thinking when they heard about all these TV series, I got to watch that. Wait a minute, I missed that. Who's got the time to keep
who's
up with all this?
Who's got the time? I yeah. always say that, too, but it was so interesting looking at the list of the nominees for the Golden Globe Television Awards.
Mm-hmm.
There were very few commercial television networks even listed in that. Almost everything was cable or online platforms now.
Now, Stephen Colbert last night, something that probably will interest Chicagoans. What did he do last night?
Well, you know, before the show actually starts and before he does the monologue, they usually do like a little recorded comedy piece right before the show started. And last night it had to do with the state of Illinois, the city of Chicago, our recent legalization of marijuana. You know, Colbert went to Northwestern. He went to Second City. He's got a long Chicago history. But clearly, when you hear this bit that they did combining two favorite Chicago things together, clearly there are a lot of Chicago writers on that show. Take a listen.
Are you craving some Chicago-style marijuana? And come on down to Potillo's on South Pulaski.
Hello, I'm Fat Al.
And I'm Southside Donnie.
Potillo's, where you can get a brat with some pot. Like our char cheddar Polish joints, smothered in cheese and topped with sweetened hot peppers.
Or try a slice of our deep dish kush, a butter crust, 6 inches of cheese and sauce, and some Primo Chronic.
We also have a large selection of water pipes.
Da bongs.
So come on down to Potillo's. For Chicago style, wacky tobacky, come to Potillo's on South Pulaski.
Mm. Hey, don't bogart that dog.
I admire any song that can rhyme South Pulaski.
Wow, Dick Portillo has got to be a proud man. Potillo's.
Potillo's, yeah. It was very funny. Very funny.
So wait, that was on the broadcast?
That was the opening of the broadcast.
That was
before the monologue.
That was awesome.
They did like a fake newscast, you know, saying marijuana is now legal in Chicago. They didn't say Illinois. They said it's now legal in Chicago.
Nice.
And then they go into this fake commercial for Potillo's, which was more than hilarious.
And finally, there's a song. Did a fan send this to you? What's the story here, Dean?
We have a couple of guys called Nick and Al frequently send in parody songs to the WGN TV Morning News, and they have spoofed everybody on the show, Larry, Robin, Paul, Pat, everybody. Today, they, I don't think it's a spoof myself. I think it's quite the honor to have a song like this made. So it's Mick and Al, and their daughter, I think it's Mick's daughter named Michelle, took the Taylor Swift song called Mean, and they turned it into Dean. Give it a listen.
Okay. Dean, with your showbiz news and your film reviews that you give on Friday, Dean can rock the red carpet. My man, that Mel Gibson is a nothing, Dean, with your saute meatballs on a hot grill, cooking it up for the weekending. Greeting all the little ducks. I watch our show and folks should know. Weekday mornings, tuning in to Channel 9 News. But all I really want to see is Dean, Larry, and Robin. The rest of them are okay. But all I really want to see is Dean. All I want to see is Dean.
Thanks a lot for joining us, Mel. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Nice Mel Gibson reference. Yeah, look at you. You're kind of like you know, Robin on the Howard Stern show with all the theme songs for her segments.
I'm shocked. I commented that if we had wanted to put together a compilation, we would have never been able to find all the video that they used of like old clips of the show. But Mick and Al, they somehow have a library. I think we may have to get restraining orders on those guys. And we are looking forward. We have a pool going here. How quick it'll take Taylor Swift's lawyers to put a cease and desist on that.
Yeah, especially since Robin sounds better than Taylor.
Can we see that online, Dean?
Yes, it's on WGN Morning News Facebook page.
Okay.
So you can see all the video for that.
All right, very good. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow. All right. Thanks a lot for joining us, Mel. Take care.
Nice. It's Bob Sirott at 8:28. I told my agent that I didn't want a 9-to-5 job, so he got me a 5-to-9 gig. That's how it goes sometimes. As we mentioned earlier, the president is going to address the nation. That'll be 10 a.m. Chicago time. We'll carry that here on WGN Radio. And after our news update, along with the latest on weather, traffic, and sports, we'll talk to our old pal Scott Kleinberg, who used to write on social media for the Tribune, syndicated nationally. He's now the social media and engagement manager over at Investment News. And he's got some interesting tips for especially small businesses. Is it really important to have Instagram? And how can you really grow your business through social media and build an audience? And there's some confusing things about hashtags that he'll clear up. So that's all coming up right after the news. If you're like me, you're trying to keep up with all this social media stuff, and unless you have a 10-year-old around, it's hard to do. But we've got Scott Kleinberg to keep us up to date on that. Scott, good to talk to you again. How you doing?
Great to talk to you again, Bob. I'm great.
And for people who don't remember, you did a column for the Tribune here. It was nationally syndicated, wasn't it?
Yeah, nationally syndicated, so social, with social media tips for beginners and pretty much for everybody along the way. And still doing the social media thing.
Scott is now the social media and engagement manager at Investment News in New York. And I love the fact that you sort of make everything simple for us. And people like me need that. Let's start off talking about businesses and how important social media is. I think everybody knows at this point you got to get in the game. But is it Facebook? Is it Twitter? Is it Instagram? Let's start with that, especially for a small business. What's number one?
I think number one is always going to be figuring out where your customers are first. It's really easy to, you know, say Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. I don't think you can just choose one off the bat. I think you have to do the research and figure out where your customers are. But I think the key is to find that one place and to do your best on it rather than trying to do everything on all the different platforms.
And as far as the type of business that needs to be a presence there, large business, small business, any particular types of businesses?
I think every kind of business needs to be there. I think this day and age, you know, you hit on it before when you said that everybody needs to be there. I think there are a lot of people out there who search for a business online, on social media. If they don't see a presence, they move on to another business. And while that might not be a really smart thing to do, because the business that's not on social media may be absolutely fantastic, just the way that people navigate the world these days, I think that's where they're expecting them to be. So they do a quick search on Twitter, a quick search on Facebook, a quick visual search on Instagram, and if there's no presence, they move on, which is why you need to be somewhere.
Don't you need almost a separate staff to work social media these days? And some of these small businesses can't afford that.
You know, you would think that, and actually, no. I think if you take just a little bit, I've said this all along, if you take just a little bit of time out of your day to be on there, that's really all you need. Now, sure, I mean, if you're a bigger business or if you can afford to have a staff of people, that's absolutely fine. But, you know, be honest, where I am right now, I'm a staff of one, and, you know, I get along just fine. And I really think that a lot of people just shy away from it because that's the first thing they say. They say, I'm only one person, so I can't possibly do it. And I think that's something that people need to get over.
I need you to explain hashtags to me, and also in general, whether you're a large business, a small business, or just an individual promoting the brand, what's the best way to build an audience? So hang on. It's Scott Kleinberg, social media and engagement manager at Investment News. First, let's go to the newsroom. And Steve, before you get to the weather update, the president will be speaking at 10 a.m. Chicago time. We'll carry that on WGN. Any other late developments since we last checked in?
Just this ongoing analysis from military experts who say that the targets that were hit by Iran last night were targets that perhaps it chose specifically so there would be fewer casualties. The propaganda that's on the air in Iran this morning suggesting that they struck back at, in their words, the evil Satan, and that there were casualties. Iran media saying that there were casualties. All of that, these military analysts are saying, likely set purposely so that Iran could feel like it had some sort of retaliation and tell its people that it did something in response to the U.S.
And we're talking to social media and engagement manager from Investment News in New York, Scott Kleinberg, who we got to know here in Chicago when he was writing for the Chicago Tribune, his column, So Social. Scott, want to get into a couple of things here about hashtags, and I am not ashamed to admit I still don't get it. I don't understand it. I don't know how to use the hashtags. I don't know why we should use them. How important are they?
They're actually important, and I can try to make it easy. Hashtags are really just a way to keep everything grouped together. So if you click on a hashtag, you see what everybody is talking about on that topic. The reason why it gets confusing is because they're used in so many different places. They started on Twitter, then they moved to Instagram, then they moved to LinkedIn. You actually pretty much want to use it everywhere right now except for Facebook. You don't need it on Facebook.
And I know you went over this a lot in your column, but do it again because it was so helpful. You kind of said, okay, think of Facebook as this, think of Twitter for that, think of Instagram as that, and it was a very great way to sort of indicate what's important and for what. Do you still kind of view all of those social media channels the same way?
Most part, Facebook is still a really good place for close friends, family kind of thing. However, Facebook now has communities or groups, which is much more like Twitter would be, where you can get like-minded people to talk together. So Facebook has tried to find a way to overcome that whole close personal type of atmosphere. Instagram is for showing off a visual part of your company. Instagram is fascinating because, like you were hitting on before, if you have a company that doesn't really have a visual aspect, it's a little bit difficult. However, if you take a company and you show, you know, what your culture stands for, what kind of charitable events you go to, those types of things really translate well on Instagram. And Twitter is still the catch-all place to just have a conversation about everything. But depending on how a business uses it, it could be for customer service. It could be for reaching out about specials. You know, the sky's kind of the limit on Twitter. So to me, that's why I kind of start with Twitter and go to Instagram as my two go-to places.
And hashtags like TBT, tomorrow's Throwback Thursday, still popular. And how is that important for a business?
They're super popular and they're super helpful. Think of it this way. Any business that has any kind of history, so WGN and all the years that it goes back,
You know, you do a TBT or a Flashback Friday is another one just like that, where you post old audio recordings or old photos. And, you know, people eat that stuff up because not only is it an interesting look into the past, but it's an interesting look into company culture. So, you know, and even let's just say your business is 10 years old, you know, maybe you want to look back at the last decade. That's a great thing to do on a Thursday or a Friday. And you can save one post for one of those days or both of those days and have it set up in a social media calendar. And then it's right there when you need it.
Scott, where can people follow you on social media to get more information on any of these topics and more?
I'm usually at Scott Kleinberg. That's where I am on Twitter and Instagram. And I'll tell you what, whatever comes out next, that's where I'll be because I'm always the first one to sign up.
Yes, you are. I remember, what was it that we did here at WGN? It was a first, I remember. It was some new high-tech social media bit that we did. Do you remember what that was? I can't remember.
I can't remember exactly what that was, but I remember we spent a lot of time talking about Facebook Live and all of those things that were brand new back then.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's exactly what it was, but it's amazing how far we've come.
Yeah, it was, I don't know if it was called Sprout or it was something that was hot for a while and then it seemed to go away. But that Facebook Live is unbelievable. As you know, Marianne and I often during the week do Facebook Live casts on our page, facebook.com/Serrata Murciano. And what's incredible is, and we do it on Instagram Live as well. And, you know, you're sitting there where at home or in the backyard or on vacation or wherever we do it, and you've got two iPhones set up. And you're broadcasting to the world. I mean, we hear from a lot of transplanted Chicagoans all around the country and folks in Hawaii and Australia and all around the world. It's really incredible when you think about how you used to have giant mobile units to do broadcasting like that. And now all you need is your phone.
It is amazing. And I remember, you know, when I was talking with you back then, you know, you guys were just figuring out that whole landscape. We were talking about that. And I watch what you do now, and I think you guys do a terrific job. I mean, you've totally embraced what the platform is. You've totally embraced and given, you know, people a chance and all those places to contact you. And I think it's a really great example.
Well, thank you. Mrs. Surratt just texted me, by the way. It was Snapchat, remember?
Oh, Snapchat, of course. And you know what? Snapchat is still ridiculously popular. 72% of kids between 14 and 18 are on Snapchat, which is one of the reasons why I am not on Snapchat. And it's really difficult for me to navigate at my age, but, you know, it's still definitely popular.
Thanks, Scott. Great talking to you again. Scott Kleinberg, social media engagement manager at Investment News New York. And hopefully we'll check in with you from time to time.
That would be great.
And Scott, you will enjoy this story about Moto's new Razr. That's right, a Razr phone. It's fitting that when Motorola Mobility joined the fray to create the next big thing, phones with foldable screens, it looked to Chicago, reviving its most storied nameplate, the Razr. Listen to this. The phone is expected to sell for $1,500 when it hits stores early this year. Do you still have yours in the garbage somewhere? Motorola had expected to begin taking pre-orders the day after Christmas, but delayed the launch because of what it says was high demand. The Chicago connection is deeper than the name. Motorola is the company that developed the first cell phone, making the first commercial call from Soldier Field. Spokeswoman Sarah Cooney says of the new phone, 90% of the work was done in Chicago, which includes labs and in-house design. Andy, did you have one of those?
Of course. I had to be one of the first to get that. The only good thing about the flip phones back in the day was that you couldn't accidentally dial anybody's number.
That's right.
It was closed.
It was an advantage there.
Yeah, there was no butt dials.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. And you know what? When you do the butt dial and you try to, or if you do the accidental call and the phone's in your hand, you know, you try to hit the red button and disconnect as soon as possible, but you never get it in time.
And it always registers as a missed call, so someone's calling you right back.
I know, it's too fast. We'll talk to John Williams here momentarily, find out what he's got going when he gets here after the 9 o'clock news, and we'll check the mailbox. What are you texting about today? We'll get your feedback. That's on the way. And the news coming up will be brought to you from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Let's check on your feedback. And the Bob Surratt mailbox is open here. We've got to get an email set up. We'll do that in the next day or two. Meantime, these are texts from our phone number. Same number you call, you text, 312-981-7200. This is from 815. I really enjoy that Bob reviews headlines from newspapers. Please keep that up. Yes, I'm old school. Does the show have a new social media handle for Twitter? Do we? I don't know.
Not yet.
Oh, really? Oh, my Twitter, at Bob Surratt. Okay. And by the way, if you can't remember how to spell Surratt, let me tell this story again. I had a great-great-great-great-grandfather in England. He was knighted by the king, and his name was Ott, O-T-T, O-T-T. And Mr. Ott then became Sir Ott, S-I-R-O-T-T.
Is that a true story?
What do you think? let's see. John, I have a text here that was directed at you from 312. Mm-hmm. John, really enjoy listening to you and have for quite a while on your afternoon shows and now in the morning hours. I have more time to listen during the morning show since I do a lot of driving. I would like to see you get involved with something that has bothered me for some time, and that's the gas stations all over the city and the suburbs where the gas prices change every day, sometimes the same day. Can you find out if the state of Illinois has any control over what the prices are? It seems to me there are no regulations. I hate it when it's like it says, well, price of a gallon, I guess, $2.38, and then in small print with wash. You know, I'm always tricked by that.
My wife notices that wherever we go. She goes, oh, it's up. Oh, it's down. And sometimes you're right in the same day. When I get to be king, and the paperwork's tied up in Cook County right now, but Andy Mazur is going to be in charge of that.
Nice. Thank you.
He'll be Sir Gas.
Cool. I've been called that before.
A famous English duke or something.
You've got the president on your broadcast at 10, right?
We're expecting the president to speak at 10 o'clock. We'll continue to follow that story. We have some analysts from NextStar, a reporter in the Washington Bureau there, and from the Washington Post as well. Congressman Raja Krishnamurthy comments on what's been happening in Iraq and Washington, D.C., and we'll play some of those Jeopardy questions from the greatest of all time tournament. You'll hear that after the news.
Yes, we will. Thank you, John. Have a great day. Thanks for listening. Remember to tip your local morning radio personality.